Okay, so it's Tuesday, let's see, February 26th, 2013. This is our Tuesday night class, Gospels in Greek. This is week 58, and we're moving right along, and we've made it through to Matthew 9, 18 through 26 is what we're covering tonight. So, now, at the top of our sheets, you can see the changes. I'm always making changes, right? And italicize the New King James text, okay, because that we're using that as our standard text. I've crossed out the indicate conjunction codes with translated English. For the most part, I think I want to graduate from the conjunction codes. I think we understand them now. And now it'll just be a matter of referring to the exceptions and to the things that need explanation. You see, that's
wait. Which ones are the codes?
Those are CHCS and CACC. Those codes. Well,
no, all right.
Yeah.
No, what you said though is well.
And it will make more sense in light because I want to move more toward the relationship of the propositions, and it becomes a little cumbersome when the dual purpose of the conjunction are that if when we identify the conjunctions, whether they're coordinate or whether they're subordinate or hyperordinate, the fact remains that once we can begin considering the relationship of each proposition one to the other, our new thinking in terms of describing that relationship is built on the idea of it being mainly subordinate clauses, a subordinate relationship. So what we find out we're doing, we're kind of reduplicating our identity with the use of those symbols and then with the the symbols we use for tracing the argument. I don't know if that makes any sense.
It makes enough sense.
Yeah, okay.
Don't worry about it.
Okay. So now, I want to indicate argument tracing codes. That's the new thing. Argument tracing codes with translated English text. So when we have the New King James, then we have the translated text, and then comments and implications. That's the format that we've generated to so far. And in the one that has the comprehensive translation, there we'll put in the relationship codes. You'll see this. And again, in this narrative type of gospel, these tracing codes they're not that useful. But they are certainly useful when we get into more complex scripture, especially with Paul. So while we don't really need them right now, it's a good opportunity for us to at least get more familiar with them. And as we move forward, then our level of approaching the word is, you know, getting, in a sense, getting higher and higher, or more comprehensive, let's say, and more comprehensive. Okay, so, and I wanted to indicate, instead of putting the CH there, I want to embold the translated English text, put it in bold type. That way it stands out to us immediately as we see the translation.
Well, it's kind of, I guess, the question, like, that was why I had the question, but that answers it right there.
Yeah.
If you have that.
Right.
Well, then what if you lose the main, you know, the real...
Exactly. Good. Well, good. And I'm glad you had that concern. I really am.
said, no,
because the thesis, you know, the coordinate and the subordinate, they interrelate. I've been tallying these things, and sometimes there'll be like two hyperordinates, and there'll be four or more, six subordinate clause things, and there'll be like 10 or 12 coordinate. So the number of those, where we're really interested in is once we've captured the idea of coordinate and subordinate in that supporting relationship, then we're really looking for the hyperordinate to get to the centrality of the text. And so we don't need to think it through to that extent each time.
Well, the conjunctive lines are spatial, if you look at them as a picture.
Yeah, you're right.
Right. And then the up and down and the state.
Exactly.
Familiar and all these things, and then these conjunctions. But the trouble is that you can have a couple of hyper conjunctions, and they belong, not in that space, but they're located in terms of the text, but they're located in space correctly.
Yeah, they're special, and they come out from the page, and so we need to give them our attention. So we need to identify them first and give them our attention. And what we'll find is, and what I'm trying to explain is, that there are the majority of the 19 types of identifying the relationship between propositions. There are 19 of those ways. The majority of them are you have a coordinate conjunction and then a subordinate, or you have a subordinate and then a coordinate. So they go back and forth that way, and that's the meat of, that's the ongoing basis of most of the argument. So once we get used to the fact that if we have one proposition that says, I do this, I'm do this, and then we see because, we immediately know that the because is supportive. And we get, that comes to us in a kind of a second nature. We don't have to identify it as, now that's subordinate. Because, as I say, the majority of the relationships are based on the coordinate against the subordinate propositions. Do you understand? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
basically,
good.
What? Just look at the foundation more.
Right, and the subordinate and the thing they work together all the time. So we're always going to the basement and back up, basement and back up. And so maybe our idea of basement and back up is like in the house and the having to do with the foundation, either on the foundation or under the foundation,
right,
or in the foundation. You know, deeper in
the
foundation,
plumbing.
And in the plumbing, and then the hyperordinate is like on the top roof of the house. Maybe we ought to think of it as there, you know. Like the Hebrews had their roof on the house where they had activity, and it's up there that you see things more clearly. So that's probably a pretty good analogy, too. Okay, so having said all that stuff, divide sections into New King James Text, comprehensive translation, comments, and implications. Now, you know, the comprehensive translation is where I try to bring out all of the ideas of the participles, the middle voice indications, and things like that, without being complicated about it. I mean, we just, like instead of identifying an imperative, we already know now that whenever we see an imperative, it's always going to be I expect, the expectation aspect of it, which is so much more helpful than just saying this is in the imperative or this is a command. See, we have all these things going on psychologically with these the impact. There's the connotation of these things. It's a command. Well, it's like, no, I don't like commands. Or it's like, oh, what, another command? Like, who's making the command? And, you know, like, what I expect is just a straightforward expression from the text that the writer is conveying, appealing to one, from one will to another. I expect you to do something. And so it comes out just quite naturally by saying, I expect, without, you know, even identifying it as, I'm not trying to sneak around and being,
right,
you know, use euphemisms to avoid commands, because sometimes the commands, like we saw Sunday, sometimes the commands from God are extremely strong, like the one not to eat the blood and the one not to kill and murder.
Mm-hmm.
Equally vital in God's eyes. And very, the highest expectation of compliance. So anyhow, and so when that happens, we bring that out too. So, and the comments and the implications, that simplifies it. I'm not putting the Greek and the, you notice I took that out, present the translation section in format Greek, New King James, and Comprehensive. That's a little, I want to try to ungummy it up so that we don't have confusion. I'm trying to get away from confusion. I want to just be straightforward, and I want us to be rewarded for our having learned these things and to become useful to us. Take up the training wheel, so to speak, so there's not encumbrance, and we can more freewheel as we go. And I think it's a move in the right direction. I'm glad we're there. Okay, so Matthew 9:18-26. We read the New King James text. While he spoke these things to them, now the last time we left him, he was with the in the house with the banquet, right? And everybody was flooding in. Wasn't that where we were before?
I believe so.
Yeah. And everybody was flooding in there, and all the tax collectors were gathering together and stuff. And the spies were coming in. And, what's going on there? Oh, what? The police, religious police coming in, busting them. Okay, and so, behold, a ruler came in and worshipped him. Now that is saying something.
Yeah.
Whoa! You would think that is really central to it, but it's not.
No.
It's not the central issue. Okay. Behold, a ruler came and worshipped him, saying...
Yeah, they say knelt before him in this translation.
Right, right.
Weaker.
Yeah, this is weaker. Well, yeah, I guess... knelt before him, but
weaker.
I don't know which one is weaker. Worshipped him or knelt before him?
Knelt is weak.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, yeah, worship is strong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, saying, my daughter has just died, but come and lay your hand on her and she will live. So Jesus arose and followed him, and so did his disciples. And suddenly, now there's the use of that "idu" again, and they translated suddenly. I like that. It's really probably not as the surprise element's there, like 181st, but it's the only thing we're lacking in this suddenly idea is the notion of pay attention. You know, it's the surprise element, but it's heads up. And I'm not ready to translate it suddenly, heads up, you know, But that's kind of closer to the real idea of it. Okay. It's an interjection, so it's I've softened it in a way by having it, and suddenly, and so have they. But let's go on. And suddenly, a woman who had a flow of blood for 12 years. Man, they didn't have transfusions or.
I can't remember right now, but I remember. Isn't the number 12 come up? Not to get into numerology or whatever, but doesn't the number 12 come up a bunch of times? I'll have to find out. I wish I had the example.
12
so
years.
The girl, 12, and. Anyway.
Okay, interesting.
I'll find that.
But and there was no, what do they call them, iron pills and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Came from behind. Ah! Sneak attack. And touched the hem of his garment. Because she said to herself, if only I may touch his garment, I shall be made well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're not going to let that slip away from us, because there's a little more there than meets the eye.
Yeah, I don't know. The little things on the end of the garment, the Jewish thing. Well,
a lot of stuff going on here.
Yeah.
But Jesus turned around, and when he saw her, he said, be of good cheer, daughter. Your faith has made you well. And the woman was made well from that hour.
Mm-hmm.
When Jesus came into the ruler's house and saw the flute players and the noisy crowd wailing, he said to them, make room, for the girl is not dead, but sleeping. And they ridiculed him. But when the crowd was put aside, he went in and took her by the hand, and the girl arose. And the report of this went out into all that land.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now let's get into the comprehensive. Now, I've shown the time. There, this is full of participles that have to do with time.
Yeah.
Present time. You know, while he was doing this, he did that. While they were doing this, they did. As they were doing this, they were doing that. And the aorist participle, which is after he had done this, then he did this. After they said this, he did this. So there's these things going on. They all relate to time. So it is totally redundant, especially in a narrative like this, to go marking all those time elements. You have all these T all over the place. It's not bad to be aware of them, but we don't want to get caught up in the busyness of, you know, identifying all these things in a formal manner. I did hear, just to bring it up, more or less, while and to bring out the fact that the time has a certain amount of importance.
Mm-hmm.
While he was speaking these things to them. Now that's interesting. It does say that in the New King James. While he spoke these things to them. I don't know, it just comes out more clearly when you use the participle idea. While he was speaking of these things, because that's what it says. Speaking of these things to them. Do you see the difference in the two?
Yeah.
Speaking these things. Well, then you look and see what he was talking about, and you say, well, it's just words. No, he was speaking of these things. He was explaining these things. He was teaching. So there's a vast difference in the idea of explaining something and just saying words. And suddenly, there, actually that's another time thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, a ruler, after making an appearance. Now here's what it says. He fell down worshiping him. That's what it says in the Greek. So that takes care of both of it.
Okay.
And one fell swoop. No pun intended. No pun taken.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he fell down worshiping. As he, see that, here's the thing. These participles are very useful. It's a time element again. He fell down as he was worshiping him. I didn't get redundant about that, but he fell down worshiping him is how it's expressed. He fell down as he was worshiping him. So it was all one whole thing here. While saying at the same time. Now here we have a hyperordinate conjunction. A hyperordinate. And so I've emboldened the words. So this statement now, this entire sentence, is hyperordinate. So we've emboldened it. This is one of the central parts of this whole text. That my daughter has just now died. So it was just now she died. But after coming with, notice the time thing, but after coming with me, I beg you to lay your hand upon her and she will come back to life. Now what I want to point out in the relationship idea, just as practice, notice I put an AC before I beg you to lay your hand upon her, and an RES before and she will come back to life. The relationship is this: action and inevitable results. His faith was, you lay your hand upon her, she will come back to life. To him, that was an inevitable result of him having laid his hand on her. Now that's faith.
Well, there's the motion is for back and forth, because it's a motion that she's dead, right? And,
she's dead.
And the motion that's going to happen is he wants Jesus to reverse that motion and then produce life motion.
Exactly. And that's what we call resurrection. Resurrection.
So a cause and effect is just weaker than this? And you're saying action, inevitable result, as opposed to cause and effect, you know.
Well, death is irreversible effect, right? So there's no.
No, but what I'm saying is, I mean, isn't cause and effect like a different
causality?
Causality is implied in this, but as far as relationship of propositions, it is more clearly understood in terms of action. A result. And with the stress on inevitable. And the Bible is full of that. So then you'll notice that there's an asterisk and a CSV. Now that's a little complicated, but I'll just mention it and we won't dwell on it. My daughter has just now died, but, and the whole thing that follows, after coming with me, I beg you lay hand upon her, she will come back to life. But she will, so the contrast, the CSV means concession. It means she has now died, But I'm asking for this concession that she will be brought back to life. I don't know if you understand what concession. Concession is a hard... A concession is the idea where... in fact, let me read it here, because I think it'll be more clear this way. Hang on.
Get a pardon, or...
It's like the results are different than expected. Are different than you would normally expect. The statement, when he says, "My daughter has just now died," you don't expect the next statement to be involved with her coming back to life. That's called a concession. Now, it's a little complicated. I understand that. And I'm not trying to make it more difficult, but...
Probation, the criminal gets sentenced, and then they get together in probation, and that sentence is reversed, or lessened, or changed.
Yeah. Here's the idea of the concessive. When a concessive proposition is used in a subordinate proposition to develop the argument by contrasting it with the action or event expressed in the main proposition. The main proposition is that my daughter now died. The concession is that he's looking for her to come back to life. It's a contrast. The concessive clause, the second clause, indicates that the proposition in the main clause, the asterisk, stands. She is dead. It stands. We all understand. She is dead, and she just now died. Even though there are conditions that would cause one to expect the opposite, there are conditions that in his mind he expects the opposite to take place. This is the idea of concession. This is when... concession states something contrary to and other than would normally be expected from the stated action. She's dead. Well, you won't normally think that now I want her to be alive. I mean, she has the possibility that she's going to be alive. This is a concession. Okay, that's enough on that. Jesus, after rising up, he and his disciples followed him, and suddenly, here's another suddenly, a woman suffering from a chronic bleeding for 12 years, after approaching him from behind, took hold of for herself, now here notice this wording, took hold of for herself. Does that remind you of anything like middle voice? She actually took a hold of...
Wasn't it Tully for one of those things?
Well, that's the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
I think. Yeah, that's the whole thing. Tallis is...
But they did... But didn't
Tallis
they,
is...
But didn't they represent... I thought they like represented like the rules.
Yeah, the law.
The law.
Representation of the law. Reminder of the law.
So why would she...
Yeah, I don't know. See, that's a good question. That's a good question. That's a good question. Okay, so she approaches him from behind. She took a hold for herself. This is the middle voice, which means that she participated in the act of not only taking hold, but bringing it to herself. Now, I want to get this picture because I think this is what is actually happening here. She took a hold of the bottom of this outer garment and she drew it to herself in a physical way. It wasn't just reaching out and touching it. That word is used, we've seen it on a Sunday, we talked about it one time, where it's not just touching, it's grabbing a hold of and pulling it to yourself. That comes out in the middle voice. She participated in it somehow, in the touching, and not just touching, but taking hold of and drawing it to herself.
Physical detail and, specific.
Yeah, right, okay. So, having said that, She took a hold of herself of the tassel of his outer garment. Because this is the ground, this is the reason why she did this. Because she had been saying to herself, within herself, she'd been dreaming about this. She'd been wishing for this. This is something that she had been thinking about. Here's what she was thinking. If only I might take hold of for myself of his outer garment, then I will be cured, saved, rescued, delivered, kept safe, preserved, cured, made well. All those things. Now, I have comments about that later, so I'm going to move on from there. But Jesus, after being turned around, it's passive turned around. It's possible that when she grabbed this, it's more than speculation. It's the idea that why would it be expressed? He would turn himself around. He would turn around. And it would just be expressed he turned around to become face to face with her. But it's not. It's passive. Was the crowd jostling him about in such a way, everybody was trying to get close to him, that he was turned around and there he saw her? Surprise! And she already had a hold of his tap. Something has to give mechanically here, physically. I'm not saying that she had even the strength to pull him around, but I'm saying...
I thought there was a first one of the other ones where he felt some power go out of him, or is that...
I checked this out in Mark, and...
Because then he said, who
touched me?
Yeah.
But the touch me, who's who grabbed a hold of me. See, it's not who touched me, it's
right,
who
right.
grabbed a hold of me.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. So whatever happened, and is explained in the other Gospels, it is the maintain is always the
sure.
grab a hold of. Okay, so after, now here's another thing. Here's another embolden. We're on the roof now. But Jesus, after being turned around and after seeing her, bomb, 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 this stepwise thing, he said, daughter, I expect you to take courage, for your faith has fully, that's perfect tense, fully cured you. Now, what do you have to understand about the idea of the perfect tense, which I didn't bring out in the comment, but I should have, is perfect tense relates something that happened in the past, some event that happened in the past. Here, I'm going to show you this illustrated on this paper here. So when I can have your eyes. In the past, this represents the future, this is the past, the convention is past, future. Left to right for us. I mean, we gotta think of that way. An event, circumstances, or occurrences led up to a culmination, and perhaps with dealing with her faith, it was a matter of her coming to the conclusion that, I mean, she knew she needed healing, but she had also heard about Jesus and his power to heal and to make whole. In that process, she comes to a conclusion represented by the dot. It's a culmination of her thinking and hoping and coming together and saying, wow, you know what? If I even grab a hold of his garment, I'll be cured. Okay, so that occurred in the past. Her faith actually was expressed. That he's referring to is referring to a past faith. How can I say that? Because that's the idea of the perfect tense. It's built into the perfect tense. It is a picture, it's picture clear in the perfect tense idea. Always. The result of that culmination, or that culmination of faith, had a reached into the present tense by my matter of being extended.
So what's he saying? Like, because you believed that if you would touch me.
Yes, yes, exactly.
As soon as you did.
Yes.
It came to be. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. It's a very precise explanation of what went on there. It wasn't her faith at the moment that
right.
he was dealing with. It was her faith earlier that led her to the point where she would seek him out and attempt to... Yeah. It wasn't a spur of the moment. Oh, there he is. It wasn't an impulse. It wasn't like going to the store and buying the candy bar on the way out of the checker counter.
Well, that's what you say. Well, all these people, you know, are jostling him, so that, you know, that's all.
She had to
happening.
Work.
She's
had to
like,
work to get
in. Right.
And she's weak. I mean, you lose blood, and so she probably, you know, would get sick and then have to recover.
They're getting too graphic on that. Wasn't that supposedly, you know, menstrual?
Yes,
or whatever?
Of course.
That's uncleanliness.
Right.
And so it's pretty. It's not just a
yeah,
physical affliction. I mean,
right.
So.
Right.
In everyday life, you have a powerful past experience, right? And it's very clear, right? And then it comes in the future. Well, it makes sense because it's happened so clearly in the past.
Right.
It's clear in the future, and that works out. And it says that the past is correct and the future is in agreement. And you got a wonderful perfect.
Yeah, it's perfect. Exactly. Exactly. Isn't he expressive these days?
So it says, so it starts there, and then it's
and it, okay, oh, let me finish the idea. And by the way, I have to comment about, it's okay to talk about these things. They're not pleasant. But the menstrual rags that they used are the rags being referred to as filthy rags by God. Yeah, those are the rags. It's not the one that you use to wipe your hands off
right.
when you change the oil in
right,
your
right.
in your chariot.
That makes it all the more, you know, filthy.
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely.
We know because of it was
yeah,
clean
exactly.
and it was, you know.
Right.
You had to be purified before you could.
Even
to
touch.
That yeah, you couldn't go into the temple. You couldn't, right?
Because by and this is, see, this is something that's coming out that I didn't think through. By the fact that she, when they had her touching, she more than touched, she grabbed hold of and drew to herself. That's the implication, she drew to herself.
So it's like she was unclean.
Unclean, and so see, by all Jewish tradition
she
and...
She broke it all.
She had contaminated him. He was now unclean. By all the Jewish
right.
laws that she was taking a hold of to bring to herself. By those same laws, he would be considered unclean.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And yet it doesn't say that he stopped, and because in order to cleanse himself, it would take a whole day, I think, or something like that. I don't know, some ritual thing and blah, blah, blah. But he went beyond that. He went beyond that. So this is very powerful.
So if you have a teacher in grade school or middle school says, "Oh, be clear and distinct and exact, right? And it's going to pay off to you in the future, right?" And that's true, right?
Yeah.
The more the student learns how to be clear,
exactly,
and logical and matter of factual, then the more he'll be rewarded as he goes through the grades. It becomes easier and easier.
Yeah, it all works together. Now back to the perfect tense. So this, the result of this event having occurred in the past, which is the culmination of her faith, then reaches into the present. And so the idea of the present, of the perfect tense, now I need your eyes for this, is taken from the viewpoint of the present. So it's stating that the effect, let me read this to you. Again, this is not something we go through every time, but when it affords us an opportunity like this, I want to go into perfect tense. Right out of the grammar, I just happen to have it with me. Imagine that. Okay, the perfect tense is the tense of complete action. Its basal significance is the progress of an act or state to a point of culmination. That's in the past. And the existence of its finished results in the present. So, like you said, if you do this now and you prepare and you get it, then it will affect, from that standpoint, it will affect the future. But now if we're looking back, we're seeing where it came from. Because there was this activity in the past, now we're looking at it in the present. We're seeing the results, the significant results of something that occurred in the past. And this is what Jesus is saying. Because you did this in the past, now the result of your faith is that you're going to be healed. I'm healing you right now.
Sherlock Holmes, of course, is a famous advocate of this, using the present to understand facts in the past that didn't occur and predict the future. Using Sherlock Holmes' method of abduction.
Wow. Abduction?
Yeah.
Neat. Wow. Now let me go on here. Let's see. The point of completion is always antecedent to the time implied or stated in connection with the use of the perfect. In other words, the past idea. It occurred before. Her faith occurred before. The exact meaning is often difficult to render because of a blending of the sense with the English simple past. This makes the impression upon the English student that the line of distinction between aorist and perfect in Greek is not clearly marked either. It's best to assume that there is a reason for the perfect whenever it occurs. Now, you've heard me say that before. That's where I got it. When we find it occurring in Scripture, it is worthy of our attention because it is there purposefully. Whenever it occurs, there is a reason for the perfect. And it's interesting, isn't it?
I mean, it's pretty powerful. Like, I don't want to get off into the... I mean, obviously you have to have the grace of, you know, God to be able to do something, but it's a very powerful where there's a... You know, to puppet on a string. I don't know. I don't want to get into it, but it's... You've got to, like Jesus is saying. Are you saying it? I'm not.
Yeah,
saying it.
Right.
And because you did this, you know, and you believed and whatever, it just seems more powerful to me. I mean, of Jesus, of, you know, of giving people grace or whatever. It's not just, I don't know, when I think of grace sometimes, that's just like passive. It's like, well, you know, I don't do anything. I mean, I know you don't do anything, but it's like I don't have to do anything.
I know.
And I get caught in turmoil with that. Exactly. I'm like, well, because, you know, those people was like, well, I can do whatever I want.
Oh, that's
you know,
crazy. That's
what
so
I mean.
Wrong.
That's what
so
I mean.
Wrong.
It's crazy.
That's
and
so
then,
wrong. That's so wrong. Here's the thing that I see. Yeah, here's how I see it. God gives us faith. When we exercise the faith, He rewards it. He responds to it.
Right. That completely makes sense.
We're clear to have a special understanding because this is a series. It starts with Jericho. Jesus is coming to town, right? And they ambush him with this blind man, right? Is when it's at the start, right? Now we've gone through quite a few weeks now of a series.
Yeah.
And every series, there's something there that builds on the other series.
Yeah,
Now, I want to know, which maybe we're going to get to, why in this whole thing with the guy coming to ask Jesus, why is this part inserted? I mean, why with this woman?
Oh, well, the connection? This connection.
Okay.
We'll see the connection.
All right.
We're gonna talk about the connection. That's a very good question.
It's like interrupted. I never
very,
think, I'm like, well, what is...
Very
okay,
good question.
It goes back to the story.
Yeah, how does it relate? Good. I love it. I love it. These kind of questions are right on. Spot on. Oh, I'm drinking too much tea. Okay, so... And after he came into the house of the official, and after seeing the flute players, and the crowd being stirred into an uproar, he continued saying, I expect you to withdraw. Now, this is a command. It's not any different than saying, get out of here.
Right.
drag yourself out of here. Get going. Whoa, whoa. Because the girl is not dead. Now, here is where the hyperordinate conjunction is. But she is sleeping. Now, why that is there, I don't know.
And that sleeping is... Because they used to say... What was the difference in Greek? You know, when they said, he has fallen asleep, but they meant dead. Is this different or the
yeah,
same, but it's
no.
just...
I don't know. This
but it's
is,
the
this
context
is
different, so it, you know what I'm saying?
Right, but I what comes out here is... I think probably the bigger picture is that nobody realized who he was. He is God. And when he says she is only sleeping, but she is sleeping, that is in the purview of God's determination.
Okay.
So the thing that is coming out here is, and they continued laughing at him, is their response to him. They didn't question what he said, they just laughed at him. And by the way, the continued laughing at him is the idea that it's the imperfect tense. The imperfect tense denotes a past action that continues. It's like the perfect, except that there's no culmination in it. It's an activity in the past, because we're looking
what
at
is
this
that
in
again?
The past. Imperfect tense. Imperfect. See, it doesn't reach that perfection of completion. It doesn't even come to a culmination in the past. It's just an ongoing, they laughed at him. They continued laughing at him. They were boom, 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 boom laughing at him. It wasn't like, ha! And that was it. It was a continued laughing, and they were probably poking each other.
But then when the car had been driven outside, I mean, that's...
Huh?
The next part, though, it says, but when the crowd had been driven outside, it's not like when they kind of left.
Yeah, well...
Well, you don't even know. I'm
that,
just saying...
Yeah,
but well,
that's my,
to,
that's
know,
my
like they're laughing and
now,
stuff.
That's my translation. Let me see. We'll see what the King, New King James said. What the New King James... And when the crowd was put outside, no, it's...
Well, I mean, it's Jesus going...
It had the strength of being driven out. And that's what I wanted about. And here we have another emboldened section. But, and so this is the hyperordinate statement. But when the crowd had been driven outside... After he had entered inside, he took hold of her hand, and the girl was raised up. Passive. Was raised up. It wasn't that she raised up. She was raised up. And this report or news went forth into that entire region. Okay, now, comments. The way I'm approaching this is to repeat the translation with comments. While he was speaking of these things to them, suddenly a certain ruler, after making an appearance, he fell down worshiping him while saying. Now, detail, a certain. Notice it says a certain ruler. This adjective is actually the cardinal number one. One ruler. One ruler.
And not one of many, but like one big shot one?
No, one of many.
Okay, one of many.
The implication is that this is one particular official. That this one particular official was the exception to the other rulers. A certain ruler. Exceptional. He was not representative of the official rulers, synagogue rulers, that Jesus came in contact with. He was exceptional. Does that make sense?
Did he have to be Jewish?
Well, yeah, he had to be Jewish. So we know. Now we know he's Jewish too.
No, but how do we know he was Jewish?
Because he was a synagogue ruler.
It says it's implied. Okay.
It's implied. A ruler. That's what generally referred to. They wouldn't. If it had been a Gentile, it would have been he would have been entitled and identified as the centurion, for example. Yeah, yeah. And that's not guesswork. That is pretty much understood.
Yeah.
So ruler, the kind of ruler is that of a synagogue official. Okay. He fell down worshiping him. This verb is in the imperfect tense, past tense continuous, thus indicating that his reverence for Jesus was much more than a simple bowing gesture of greeting, thus implying that during all the while of his conversation with Jesus, the man was prostrate before his feet. That explains the while worshiping him, he was humbled before. And it wasn't just a simple greeting, you know, like tipping the hat. See, we have greetings that are formal, and you know how the Texan if he wanted to greet somebody, he would reach up to the top of his brim, pull the hat down, maybe put it over his heart, and do a little bow.
So this is really a subtext as a message to other officials, right? This person's got it right, boy.
He's exceptional, and like, where did this guy's faith come from? Well, we know it came from God, so we know that the Holy Spirit is at work in this guy's heart. So what I want to explain about the sometimes then the other greeting is that you lift up your hat and then put it back on, and then the other time you grab the rim and
just
pull the hat,
ma'am, or other things,
you come to the point where you just touch the rim, ma'am, and a little bow of the head and nod the head, and that is supposed to take all of that into consideration. That is not what was happening here. This man was, in the imperfect tense, tells us that he was continuing to worship him, so he remained at his feet.
And it turns out he's getting a pretty big reward for good, right behavior.
Yes. And we'll see that it has to do with his faith, and this is what the two have in common. Their exceptional faith.
Yeah.
Exceptional faith. Okay, so he found him. Because the word is proskuneo, I put the thing in there, to worship, that'd be the transliteration for you. Ruler, under the ruler, proskuneo. Now, when you see the little dot, a little dash above it, that's the accent. So, I haven't figured out how to put that in over there in the English. So
where we get prostrate from or something?
Yeah. And pros means facing, and so it was a facing him, and the idea of worship is that encounter, face to face encounter. Okay, so that my daughter has just now died, but after coming with me, I beg you to lay your hand upon her, and she will come back to life. This sentence is indicated as CH, thus the emphasis. Okay, now we already took care of that. Just now died. This is an interesting little thing. The implication is that an appeal to the healing powers of Jesus was this man's first thought, as being opposed to an afterthought or last resort.
Yeah.
Am I reading too much out of that?
No.
Because I don't want to read anything into it, but am I reading too much out of it? I don't think so.
No.
She just now, and it was not, it was, the idea is just that. She just now died.
Since there was an impulse, probably there wasn't much thought to it.
Well, there was a there had to be a preconditioned thought for him to come to that conclusion. He again, like the woman, had heard about Jesus. He was no stranger to thinking of Jesus. Maybe he had an encounter with, maybe he was in the crowd, maybe he had seen. The chances are very great that he had seen a miracle being performed by Jesus. Doesn't say that, but his faith was already there, just like the woman's. It wasn't at the moment type of faith. It was a faith that, now it's not in the perfect tense here, so we can't do that little thing with the perfect tense. But we can from what we learned about the perfect tense and the whole idea of faith in operation, come to that same conclusion, that this man's faith preceded this event.
The physical fall down and kneeling is a subordinate.
Yeah, right. So he'd already come to
the
same
conclusion.
Hi, I'm very sorry I'm so late. But I was trying to finish my dinner and I got caught up in this conversation with a lady over there.
Okay. Are you going to pull up a chair? Or?
I guess I'll sit right
all
there.
Right.
You know?
Why don't you pull up a chair right there? That'll be easier. Let me get you that chair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pull up a chair right there. I'll give you a chair. Okay, so... Okay, just now died. It was not a last resort. This man's faith was different from that of the previous Gentile centurion. Remember the centurion?
Yes.
Whereas the Gentile understood that Jesus had such high authority that it would not require his immediate presence in order to heal. Remember that he said,
yes,
you don't even have to come into my house. And he understood authority and he said, you know, do it here. And that was the degree of his faith. And Jesus did.
Yeah.
This one thought that he needed to physically touch his daughter. You see the difference there? For her to be brought back from the dead. I beg you to lay your hand upon her with the inevitable result that she will come back to life. That was his faith. So, this healing preceded the raising of Lazarus, I think, didn't it? Yeah, had to.
Yeah.
Whereby we learn that the laying on of Jesus' hand is not necessary in order for him to resurrect a person from among the dead ones. That's how it's, I can't help, that's how it's expressed in Greek.
Mm-hmm.
From resurrect a person out from the dead ones. That's what it's called. And so, was Jesus then condescending, in a sense, in a positive sense, not in a negative sense, to this man's idea of faith? I mean, I think it's sweet, if that's the case. Because if the idea that Jesus goes through that step that he was looking for. Jesus didn't have to do that. That's my point. He makes a choice. Jesus doesn't diminish his faith by saying, "Oh, look, you got it all wrong. I don't have to go there. I can heal her from here. Watch this. Zap. You go back there and get your daughter." And, you know, what would this do to a guy? I mean, it's like, well, think of that. I think this is very significant in the continuity of our faith acted out in Christ.
But we're in different, we're in different, we have different experiences, different stages of faith. And I think Jesus is, he's not going to bend to us, but he's willing, I don't want to say willing to accommodate us in a way.
Well, yeah, accommodation is the word I mean, yeah.
He's God, but
he doesn't lord
it over. You know what? I'm going to help you because you're different than that guy, and this, you've got, you know what I'm saying?
You see the sweetness of it. The sweetness of the, if what was the word you used?
Accommodation.
Accommodation.
Yeah, thanks. Accommodation. The sweetness of accommodation. He didn't have to do it that way. He chose to do it that way. And it did nothing but build up the person's faith from that. It didn't destroy it. He never puts them down. You see, that's the thing.
He will be harsh sometimes. He will be.
Oh yeah, he's capable and very justifiably so.
I'm saying there's no like one size fits all kind of thing.
No.
I'm saying that's exciting because
yeah, it is.
You know, it's. I mean, I just find that exciting because, I mean, he's approaching, you know, his creation in just many different ways.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
With the end result being the same, but his will, but... anyways, all right.
Okay, so we're going to focus on lay your hand upon her and she will come back to life. The implication is that her resurrection would be the inevitable result of the act of Jesus having touched her. That was the implication. The faith of the man and the woman seems to bear out the notion that according to your faith it shall be done unto you. Mm-hmm. Since both had stated the exact manner by which Jesus did heal and did resurrect by laying hold of Jesus and the other by being laid hold of by Jesus. What they had.
But even when you said Lazarus, though, he's not going to wait a couple of days before I go. You know? You know, it's almost a little stronger. He's like, I'm going to add another layer. According to their faith, but didn't Mary or Martha say.
If you had been here sooner.
No, then I thought. She said something after that, so then I. But I know you can. Right, raise them from. I'm trying to link like it'd be according to your faith. Maybe their faith was.
Well, perhaps.
I'm just throwing it
now,
out there.
Now, God's timing. I don't want to get too abstract from this.
But because it's getting closer to.
God's timing is, if some, God waits until people get themselves in such a bad shape, before he condemns them. He gives them. Gives them all the rope that they need. Mm. See, before he pulls it. So you can't say that God is arbitrary and that he just does these things and like, whoa, where'd that come from? Oh my God, give us a chance. I mean, give us a chance. He is long-suffering. He gives such chance after chance after chance. But there is a time.
Yeah.
And there will come a time when the door is closed. I mean,
the specific humble official from the synagogue and the humble woman from the ordinary—they
were ripe fruit.
Because their examples. You get the idea of humbleness as an abstraction, as a theoretical or abstract idea of humbleness, and that's we're going to get rewarded for humbleness as as behavior.
Well, yeah, and in the sense that they were ripe fruit. Their faith was already built in the past. This was an expression of their faith in the present. See, it's like they're picking the fruit off the tree. This is ripe. Perhaps the faith of Lazarus' family was not ripe yet. It needed a couple days. But Lazarus got ripe in the process. A little overripe, as a matter of fact, in the process, at the expense of their ripeness in faith. And perhaps, I'm only guessing that it's a possibility. I'm suggesting it's a possibility.
But again, that just goes back to, I like how it's just different ways that he's just approaching things, you know? Sometimes he just zaps,
Okay, this kind of faith was remarkable in its strong appeal to the creative and life-bestowing power and authority possessed by Jesus as God. Since this official would understand that only God has such power. That's what makes it so significant about the contrast between the woman and the synagogue official.
Yes.
The synagogue official was schooled in the Word, and he knew that only God had the power to bring a person back to life, the creative power. This man was already well advanced in his faith in Christ. Look, put it another way, both of them had experienced the life-saving work of the Holy Spirit before they came in contact with Jesus.
Yeah. That's the way it works, though.
That's the way it works. Exactly. Exactly.
That's all you brought to him.
Amen. So, and Jesus, after rising up, he and his disciples followed him, and suddenly a woman suffering from a chronic bleeding for 12 years, after approaching from behind, took a hold of, for herself, of the tassel of his outer garment. Chronic bleeding, hymoreo. Took hold of for herself. The usual translations lack the force of the original intention as expressed in the Greek. The action she dreamed about, did she not dream about this? We have an indication that she did. It dreamed in the sense of she was going over this in her mind, within herself. Daydreaming, what do you want to call it? I don't know. The action she dreamed about and the action she took was not simply to touch the edge of Jesus' garment. The word translated as touch is haptomai. Haptomai is in the middle voice, which means to fasten oneself to. See, that's what I'm saying now?
Cling to.
Yes.
Cling. I mean, you're clinging to something.
That's what I'm saying. And that's
a drag, you know? Like a little kid, if you're trying to walk.
That's what I'm saying. Have you ever, you know how a little kid will cling to your leg and stuff?
Oh, yeah. They're trying to walk and they're just.
Right. They just stay on your leg.
Cling is a very.
To adhere to cling to. Now, that's the full meaning of this word. So it is easy to see that her initial encounter with Jesus was not a wistful. I used a word, I had to look it up. I was trying to spell wistful. And it's just not a word. It's wistful. And feeling or showing a timid desire. It was not a timid expression of a timid desire. She was not casual in this. She was determined. It was not a wistful act of timidity. It was more descriptive of a semi-aggressive act in faith believing. It really was. I mean, it was.
Boldly approached the threat.
Boldly approached. And from the back side.
So
I mean, you know, it's like a sneak attack.
Sneaky.
Well, it's the only way she could get to him, though. She would have been, because she would have been thrown out of the way as an unclean in front of him. So she had to approach him from the back. But that is should increase our faith in knowing that even if we even approach God from the backside, just like Moses was privy to, that God honors that. And that's pretty special. Because she had been saying to herself, within herself, if only I might take hold of for myself, this cling to, of his outer garment, then I will be cured. Now, you see that I have some dots in there, because at the printing, I wasn't able to get it all done, so I didn't get that done until I sat down here, and I'll read you what I've got. But you've got if, and then you've got the word on in Greek. Okay, what that is, that's the if, and it is expressed in as on. Now, how it translates is not if, but whenever, or if ever. There's the idea of uncertainty.
Yes.
It's whenever. Meaning, don't know when the opportunity is going to come. If I'll have the opportunity. It is an expression of the more probable future condition. More probable future condition. That is, the notion of high probability. And it's in the subjunctive, which is used because of uncertainty implied. Now, here's the kicker. Here's what he was very, very important to understand about conditional sentences in general, but specifically here, it is important to understand this. When you have an if-then condition, if this happens, then this will happen. Any degree of probability does not rest in the result in the then clause. The probability doesn't happen there. The probability is always in the if statement. Because here's the idea. If this occurs, then this will occur. There is a link. If this happens, then this will happen. There is an inevitable result. The only probability and uncertainty relates to the if statement. Now, how does that play out in here? It means that she is not saying, I might be cured. She's saying, if only I might take hold of...
So once I get it, then...
Yes, then this is...
I may not get it. Grab it.
I might not have the opportunity, but when it occurs, then I will be cured. Okay, see the power of that statement.
Yeah.
And the idea, when we normally think of conditional sentences, we're not trained to be clear on that. That's my job. I want us to completely understand what is the probable factor with regard to the more probable future. We might immediately think the more probable future she might be, you might be cured. No. The more probable future is she might have the opportunity and take advantage of the opportunity. And when she does, whenever she does, then she will be cured. And that's the certainty of it. And that was the certainty of her faith, strong faith, a faith to emulate. And this is true of all conditional sentences, and it's good for us to bear this in mind. I might take hold of for myself is haptomai, middle voice, which means to fasten oneself to adhere to cling to, of the tassel. The tassel is... Cross Padan. It almost sounds like a crass padan. It sounds like a crass padan. It sounds like a Russian word. Crass padan. Crass padan. Yeah. okay, just don't spit on me. The Jews had such appendages attached to their mantles to remind them of the law. And this is probably what is referred to as tassel. And now the implication of those representing the law is something I'm not prepared to speak to.
He just kind of kicked some stuff for her. Maybe she was like, if I, the law, and Jesus is like, I'm beyond that,
And I don't know, I don't know what the law teaches, the Jewish law taught about that and stuff. But
it's like,
it would be
so, like, it's
somebody,
so many
wanna,
numbers of the number of tassels or the number of I remember watching something.
I'm sure somebody has thought that have made something of that. But anyway, I will be cured. It's the same word. It's sozo. It's the same word we use for salvation. So it is more encompassing than just merely being cured. However, her main concern was to be cured. But this is sozo, is like being made whole.
Right.
So it's not just I will be therapeuto, I will be healed or cleansed or something. This is a bigger thing. I will be saved, rescued, delivered, kept safe, preserved, be cured, and made well in the process. So it is a bigger picture. But Jesus, after being turned around, now here's interesting, after being turned around and after seeing her, he said, "Daughter, I expect you to take courage. Your faith has fully cured you." Here's the perfect tense. Wait a minute. Oh, we already did that, didn't we? Yeah. And the woman was cured from that moment. From that hour is a little loosey-goosey. Come on. Why give it an hour? It was in that moment. That's what it says. In that moment. From that moment, she was healed. Okay, but Jesus, after being turned around, the action verb participle denoting the turning around is in the passive voice, which further supports the notion that the encounter with the woman was a bit more physical than we might have thought. The same verb participle is used in Mark's account in the passive, so whatever else was going on at the time, one factor remains, that Jesus was turned around in some manner. Whether when she whipped that tassel to herself, she spun him around, I don't know. But he was turned around. And after he came into the house of the official, and after seeing the flute players and the crowd, and it's implied, after the crowd, after he came into the house of the official, and after seeing the flute players, and after the crowd being stirred into an uproar, he continued saying, "I expect you to withdraw, because the girl is not dead, but she is sleeping." Emphasis on "but she is sleeping." And they continued laughing at him. Now, being stirred into an uproar. This verb expression is all one word in the Greek. Being stirred into an uproar. That's one word. And I'm thankful that even in the New King James and other translations, they do string it out, and that's just not try to do a one word to one word thing. Being stirred into, notice it's in the passive, being stirred into an uproar. It's in the passive voice. The implication is that the crowd, not crown, crowd of people were themselves being stirred up, confused, and worried from Sarubeho, which is passive, meaning to be stirred up, to be thrown in confusion, or become worried. To be made, not mad, made to wail tumultuously. They were whipped up. They were being whipped up somehow. Apparently the confusion was prompted by all the sounds from the flutes and the wailing. It's a, you know, it was just being driven, and it probably was quite a concert going on there between the wailing and the flutes. Now, if you know anything about flutes, you know that they are a wind instrument.
Yes.
And if there's a lot of wailing going on, flutes are not that strong in their penetration. I'm just saying from a physical standpoint, albeit they were in a house, they were in an enclosed environment, enclosure, where the sounds would be, you know, reinforced. But my point is this, there was probably, from this description, we probably get an idea that the flutes were not playing soft, gentle, mourning type music. That in order to be heard, even, they were maybe trying to drown out the wailers, and maybe the wailers were trying to drown out the flutes. Because what's being described here is a real cacophony of sounds. But making a cacophony of indistinct sounds, thereby causing great confusion to be built among the crowd. It was a mess. Compare with 1 Corinthians 14:7 through 8. Even things without life, whether flute or harp, when they make a sound, unless they make a distinction in the sounds, how will it be known what is piped or played? For if the trumpet makes an uncertain sound, who will prepare themselves for battle? And the idea here is that they were probably making these uncertain sounds. They were just screeching. The people were wailing and the flutes were screeching. And when you play a flute, in order to make it louder, you automatically go into overtones. You go into the higher pitches of the flute. And so you'll be... If suddenly it's high-pitched and more intense and piercing. And probably all this was going on. This is a characteristic of the flute. I'm not trying to make too much of it, but that must have been a real mess. And Jesus coming into that, so he says, get out of here. Just all of you, get out. There was no salvation for that. There was no salvation. What I mean, there was no justification for all of this carrying on. It was way out of line. Way out of line. And so he got them out of there. Like, he had no respect for him. And obviously they had no respect for him because they just laughed at him. It makes you wonder what the spirit was that was in prevailing over that crowd. I mean, if we think in spiritual terms, what kind of spirit was prevailing over that crowd?
Sometimes laughter can be, I don't want to read too much into it, but you know, if they're mourning over this girl, and they're sad, it's not like, ha ha, you, it's like, ha ha, nervous, ha ha,
No, because, okay, let's go on this. They continued laughing at him. The personal response to Jesus' words is denoted by the verb katangalao, a verb indicative, imperfect. That means imperfect. It was that continuous past tense.
Or ridicule, derision.
Meaning they continued laughing at him in ridicule, derision, contempt, and scorn. The kata part of the word denotes downwardness, as in they continued laughing him down as a belittling and total contrary attitude to faith. That's pretty harsh, and that's the word kata. It's where we get the word catastrophe, you know, the tearing down. So they were tearing down Jesus, who was her only hope. They had no recognition. This is another thing that makes the father an exception. His faith was just totally different than his whole family. Okay.
No.
When the crowd had been driven outside, after he had entered inside, he took hold of her hand, and the girl was raised up. And this report or news went forth into the entire region. This sentence is indicated as hyperordinate conjunction, which thus has its emphasis. But when the crowd had been driven aside, outside, this would seem to be a teaching to us that Jesus does not generally like to work his healing among noisy and thoughtless confusion, which promotes worry and chaos rather than true faith. I think that's a pretty good indicator there that if that's the condition, you know, and we're looking for God to work, get out. Just get out. And sometimes I've had to escort people out. I mean, in my church experience, there are times that I have done that. You probably don't see me as a person who could do that, but I have done it many times. Because I recognized the anti-faith spirit that was there. We had one guy come into a service the church in the up in Deerfield.
One where you
yeah RCA the Dutch Reformed Church. Why can't I remember that? That's stupid. Anyhow, he came in and he started saying some things, and we just took him. In fact, another pastor and I took him outside and challenged him out there. And it turned out to be demonic, totally demonic. And he wasn't hearing anything. He said he was sent there to cause confusion. He told us that when we, you know, pressed him on it. And so we showed him the road. I mean, and that's just one incident like that. And so anyhow, these disturbances can have their effect and they can be spiritually driven. He took hold of her hand. Again, we see another action verb similar to the previous one. It's not the same word. It's ekratesen, and it's from the root krateo, where we get the kratos. You've heard Mary talk about kratos, and maybe I have sometimes, but mostly she has talked about that. But krateo is a verb form, and it means to take hold of, to hold fast, to seize. So there again, did he just touch her? Did he touch her hand? Sweet touching, you know, like, there you go, dear. No.
Or I was, you know, used to think.
No. Yeah, yeah, you think he...
Meek and mild, Jesus.
Like no. In the movies or something with Disney World
Jesus,
or something.
Like the land. The
touch her
hand. Little
and
yeah.
The sparks flew and, you know... No, he grabbed a hold of her hand. It doesn't say anything more than that. I mean, in terms of his physical contact with her, but he made physical contact by taking hold of her hand. Verb krateo, it comes from kratos, which means might, strength, power, and domination, or dominion. So it's an authority. See, but here's happening. What we have here is an application physically of a authority. He takes hold of her in authority is what it amounts to. His authority is taking place. I mean, is being expressed by her taking hold of her. If we want to think in spiritual / physical terms, it's as though he's taking hold of her hand and pulling her out from among the dead ones. It doesn't say that he pulled her.
Yeah.
But the fact that he takes a whole number this way, I don't know, is a very powerful expression. And the girl, then we go on to, let's see, wait a minute. The final idea might be that Jesus' grasp of her by the hand was sufficient power so as to set her into a motion up and out with reference to the bed upon which she was lying.
But I like nothing. I have to like it or whatever. But I mean, I like that because it's not, I mean, it's just the power. It's kind of ambiguous. You don't know how, but, you know, different circumstances happen to different people, different, you know, Jesus is going to grab us in different ways.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right, yeah,
maybe
exactly.
Maybe not always pull us. Maybe sometimes he kicks us, you know, or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, I kind of like that, how that seems a little vague, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, so this makes a lot of sense when we consider the wording for the next phrase, which is this. And the girl was raised up. She was passive in this action. So the raising was a result of combined forces of perhaps Jesus' lift and the life-quickening power of God the Holy Spirit at work in order to resurrect her. So, you just take it for what you see there. And but there was a transaction, a very powerful, authoritative, spiritual transaction taking place. Now, at the end now, and we finish with this report, this news. The word is, with the definite article, the news, the fame, hey fame is in Greek. Sounds like the source of our word fame. Fame, right? In fact, we take the A off, it's fame. And in fact, the King James Version does translate this word as fame. This report went forth into that entire region. This
well,
fame.
What is it in Greek? What's the good news in Greek?
Euangelion, which is a whole wholly different thing. It's good news. It's good
the tidings. I thought it was like good.
Euangelion, a good message. Good message. Yeah. Euangelion. Angelion, and the idea of angelion is where we get angel. Angels are messengers sent from God to deliver a message. Apostolos is a believer sent by God to somewhere to give a message, with a message. Apostolos.
The length of the hyperordinate here makes it possible that lots of choices are sitting there. The more words you put in there, the more the hyperordinate to tap into.
Yeah, that's true. Right. Mm-hmm. And the hyperordinate is, since it's a conjunction, it tends to relate to the whole of that sentence rather than, you know, just a part of that sentence. However, we do see on having even said that, but she is sleeping, is not the entire sentence, but it is a clause. It's in, you know, but she is sleeping is an entire clause. So it is a sentence in itself. She is sleeping is an entire sentence. So, I don't know. But there you have it. So that's it for today.
A lot going on there.
Wow. Woof. Who would dream it? Who would dream it? I had no idea. I thought this was going to be like one of those, like, uh-oh, we're just going to have to take a look at this and...